From coast to coast to coast, you're listening to Terra Informa. Hello, and welcome to the show. My name is Skylar Lippman. We would like to begin this episode by acknowledging that Terra Informa is a production of CJSR 88.5 FM, a campus and community recording studio located in Edmonton, Alberta. We are situated on Treaty 6, the historic and present territory of Cree, Métis, Blackfoot, Dene, and many other First Peoples who live and gather here. While you listen to this week's episode, consider your connection to this land, the connections of those who came before you, and the connections of those who will come after. As you may be aware, June is Pride Month, and to celebrate Pride Terra Informa style, we are exploring the relationship between queer people and the natural environment. So for this week, we are going to share with you an interview that Terra Informer Elizabeth Dowdell held with Kevin McBean. Kevin will share with us his experience as a gay man, an outdoors enthusiast, and member of the board of directors of Camp Maskbatoon. A few queer members of the Terra Informa team had the chance to reflect on their relationship with the environment and their identities as sexual minorities. For some of us, urban spaces can bring comfort and familiarity. Seeing a rainbow sticker or a trans flag in businesses or as part of urban art is a reminder that this is our space too. But what happens when we explore the natural environment? We tend to still think of the environment as a very heteronormative space, but we need to actively work to change that, and you'll get to hear Kevin's perspective on how we can do just that.
If you can introduce yourself, give me your name and tell me a little bit about who you are.
Sure. My name's Kevin McBean. I'm a member of the board of directors of Camp Maskbatoon. I'm an English teacher here in Edmonton. I'm gay and I really love the outdoors.
Awesome. So can you tell me a little bit about what is Camp Maskbatoon and maybe some of your experiences in nature, some of what you like to do in the outdoors?
Sure. So Camp Maskbatoon is an organization that I've been involved with since 2002. And it's an overnight summer camp for kids aged 6 to 17 on Pigeon Lake, Alberta. And so it's a really traditional summer camp. We've been around since 1956. And kids come for a week at a time. They stay in a cabin, you know, with their same-age peers, and just do those really classic camp activities. It's kind of like camp like you imagine it, you know, or camp like you see in the movies, right? Maybe a little more rustic than in the movies, but, you know, it's canoeing, it's campfires, it's, you know, overnight sleepovers in the woods, it's dress-up activities, it's crafts and arts and archery, and themed dinners, and just really good kind of back-to-nature fun, you know, in a way that I think really resonates with a lot of kids today. So I first started, I got involved with camp, in 2002, I was 15, and I started volunteering there. My older sister was on staff, and I remember the first time I went out, it was, I was not really sure about it, if this place was kind of for me, but really after spending like 1 week there, I kind of just fell in love. I mean, I spent 3 summers as a teenage volunteer, then I spent 9 summers on staff, you know, all throughout my university degrees, and then for the last 6 years or so, I've been volunteering on the board of directors, so it has a pretty special place in my life. So that kind of has been, you know, a large part of how I've been involved in outdoor life. Aside from that, I mean, I grew up camping with my family. Those were trips we really took, you know, from the time that I was born, you know, with my family. So we always kind of had the sense of being outdoors, and that was something that I always looked forward to every summer. And that's still something that I do a lot of today with my partner and with my friends, is just, you know, camping in the summer.
So yeah, a little bit about your experience at Camp Maskbatoon. Can you tell me about being either as a, when you were an active camp counselor, and maybe in your role now as executive director, how you bring in your, like, your identity as a gay man, and how you do you feel like you get to be a role model for, like, young campers of what it means to be sort of like knowing your identity and having explored that?
Yeah. So, I mean, my first 3 years as a volunteer, so from the age of 15 to 17, I wasn't out yet. I wasn't out anywhere in my life to my friends or family, and not at school and not at camp. And I, I mean, camps, you know, can be very sort of heteronormative in some ways. You know, there's still sort of often divided along gender lines, right? You're in boy cabins, you're in girl cabins, which of course, you know, once you're in that space, you know, conversations among campers invariably, especially teenage campers, invariably turn to things like crushes and the dance that's at the end of the week and all of these things. And so I guess as a teenage volunteer, I was aware of that, but it also didn't feel like it just didn't have the same kind of pressure. And I guess maybe that's because, you know, there were so many other traditions that seemed to, I don't know, allow another kind of possibility. So, you know, talent shows that seemed to revolve constantly around drag, really. I mean, they were drag shows at their core, you know, and not in a sort, I mean, just in a sort of fun way of experimentation. I mean, still today I walk around camp and you'll often see, you know, young boys painting each other's fingernails and just kind of, I don't know, letting those gender norms down. So I always felt really comfortable in that space. You know, even in programs that, like sports, which normally would have given me anxiety, just the word, you know, with its relation to kind of phys ed class, which was a space that I never felt safe in or good in. Sports at camp, I mean, is not, you know, your classic soccer and ultimate frisbee and football. You know, it's so often kind of, you know, silly games, you know, giant balls, and, you know, you have multiple people on the field and running in all directions and obstacle courses and, you know, wearing silly costumes. So even that space felt kind of just really comfortable for me. And so I think, you know, over my teenage years, you know, as I was coming to terms with my own sexuality as a gay man, camp was a space that I was really felt more comfortable in than almost any other space in my life, just where I felt like I could just be me. You know, I didn't pretend, I didn't have to, you know, do all these things that I felt like I had to do in school to sort of fit in. And so my first year on staff, that was actually the summer that I came out. And I came out at the end of that summer. And I think it was really that summer being at camp for the entire 2 months that kind of just gave me the ultimate push and drive to do that. And so then going back for the, you know, next 8 summers on staff, I was out at that point. And it really did feel good. I mean, the program that I was working in was called the Spirits Program. The camp is affiliated with the United Church. And for those that don't know, the United Church is quite accepting and embracing of LGBTQ communities. And so I felt, you know, really welcome from that perspective. I mean, the camp itself sort of has its roots there, but it hadn't been, you know, had a, you know, a really strong, dedicated kind of Christian program for quite some time. But nevertheless, I did this sort of Spirits program. And it was really about, you know, your own values, your beliefs, building community, being a good neighbor, you know, friendship, stewardship of the environment. And so I felt that I was able to bring a lot of myself into that. You know, and what I wanted to do was just give kids a place where they could talk about their own experiences and themselves and who they wanted to be and who they were. And so, you know, now when I look at it today from a board perspective and when I'm out there doing staff training, you know, it's really just amazing to see our young staff members who are so conversant in, you know, things like, you know, we'll brainstorm, okay, what do we need to do when we're first meeting our cabins? And our young staff people will suggest, you know, find out their pronouns. And I mean, that's just something that we never would have seen, you know, 10 years ago. You know, and so we've built that into the training, but our staff are already coming with that kind of knowledge, which is great. One of the things that, I mean, just delighted me, you know, and delighted the staff member that I was speaking with a couple years ago. We were having a good chat, and she was telling me about a camper who had come out to her and hadn't come out to anyone yet at all in their life and chose this camp counselor to kind of finally open up to. So, you know, when I hear stories like that, I know that we're doing really great stuff. Or another example, there's a website called, I think it's the Queer Mapping Project. And it allows people basically to access, you know, a world map, and then they can pinpoint locations, and they can sort of write a little note about how they sort of cleared that space, you know, how they took this space that might normally people would see as a very straight place, you know, maybe it's just a shopping center or a bar or a sports field or whatever, but they write their own experience as a queer person there. And in that way, you know, you kind of look at the map and you see the way that, you know, there's queer people everywhere and there's queer activities happening everywhere. And I was really delighted when I went to share this with my students at school. I saw that somebody had written a little post about Camp Maskatoon. So for me, that was, you know, more affirmation that we were doing really good work, that this was a space that people felt they could be themselves in.
Do you feel like this experience you've had as a young person with Camp Maskatoon and now in your career are common for queer people?
So, I mean, is this common for camps? Not as common as I'd like to see. I spent 2 summers actually working for the Alberta Camping Association. And so in that role, I traveled around Alberta and I had the chance to visit about 60 summer camps across the province, you know, to read their policy manuals, to, you know, do site tours, to chat with their directors. And it's clear that not every camp is terribly interested in opening up to that kind of diversity and inclusion as we are. As some are, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of camps that are really, I think, trying hard, and they're having these conversations with their staff and volunteers, and, you know, they're thinking about how they can be making sure that their programs are inclusive. But I think a lot are still very much rigidly heteronormative, you know, to the point of homophobic, really, kinds of spaces. As for sort of your second question there, which was, you know, is this a normal experience for queer children? I don't know that it is. First of all, I mean, a lot of kids don't attend camp, and I mean, there's other places where kids might be able to have the same kind of experience. But by and large, I don't know that they're seeing that necessarily in schools, as much work as schools are trying to do to reform their practices. And so, yeah, I don't know without camp if there's another space that exists that does the same kind of work. I am sure there is. I'm just not familiar with it. But, yeah, it's definitely something that, you know, I count myself lucky as a young gay person to have found a community early on that I felt accepted in.
Can you tell me a little bit about this experience, you know, transforming and updating and modernizing a Christian camp? Which I knew there was sort of a religious element to Camp Maskatoon, but I didn't really know that. But so this experience of updating and changing this kind of institution, if you will, and maybe challenges or pushback or like the role, just what sort of an experience that was like. Sorry, I'm rambling.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. I think I was probably presenting it as just this sort of like beautifully fluid process, you know, in my first iteration. And I think that's sort of the, you know, the trick with memory is as we kind of remember things. But really, I mean, there was some initial, I guess, challenge. I mean, when I first joined the board of directors, I was quite young. I'd had a number of summers on staff. And there was, you know, a sort of old guard of people around the table. And it's not that they weren't, I think, accepting and inclusive people. It's just, I don't think these kinds of things had ever even crossed their mind at all. I remember one board member, you know, maybe just before I joined the board, was really upset because, you know, he'd heard that they were playing like Lady Gaga songs at the dance. It must have been around 2007, 2008. And you know, was just sort of concerned about, you know, the kids and this kind of music. And I think that was the moment that I became really aware that there was just this sort of disconnect from what youth culture actually was, you know, that it wasn't that kids were sort of coming to camp and then they were being exposed to this sort of, you know, heathen pop music. It's that camp was trying to and succeeding at, you know, embracing the culture that the kids already were coming with, right? So, you know, saying, yeah, this is what kids are listening to today, and we're going to play that. And, you know, we're also at the same time going to introduce them to, you know, fun older songs that maybe they've never heard before. You know, and in that sense, camp always kind of has this timeless quality. You know, it's not unusual to be walking through the camp and hear, you know, the Beach Boys blasting from, you know, a stereo in a cabin. But I think at that moment, I sort of realized, okay, we're not on the same page here. And so there was a little bit of, I guess, just sort of question in terms of, okay, well, what exactly is it are you looking to change? Because camps can be sticky at times in terms of what they are willing to change and embrace and what they're not. One of the things I did at that time was I kind of actually appealed to them on their sort of church connection. And the United Church has a program called Affirm, which is basically a process that, you know, any church congregation can kind of go through to discern how their church community is accepting and embracing and ultimately affirming of LGBTQ people. And so it starts with, you know, really strong conversations within the congregation and a whole process that they go through to kind of say, okay, how can we be a space that we want to actually live our inclusion? And so I actually asked the board at that time if I could go to a conference of Affirm. They were hosting one in Penticton. And so I went to kind of learn more about that and how we might take on from a sort of United Church perspective some of that kind of process for the camp itself, and I came back from there feeling really, I think, really inspired. You know, I had been disconnected. I had grown up Catholic, and I hadn't been super involved with the church. I had, you know, well turned my back on Catholicism, and so I had always had this sort of uneasy relationship with the United Church. But attending that Affirm conference, I think, affirmed for me that, you know, there were a lot of really interesting people that were combining their identities as queer people and as Christians in interesting ways, and that, you know, we could kind of build on that history of the camp as a Christian space and play up that inclusive aspect of the Christian space. And so that's kind of what I started doing. So in terms of other pushback, not really. You know, because so much of camp is dealing with kids, in that sense can be easy because kids are still so much more open-minded than adults are, you know, and kids, I think, are willing to have those conversations in a lot of ways and also to kind of be corrected when maybe they do something or say something that is actually really hurtful. So it was really more the adults that we were concerned with. But, you know, I don't recall getting any pushback from parents ever. You know, increasingly we're seeing more trans campers coming out to camp, and so that's presenting some new issues just around our facility, because we're a 64-year-old facility, you know, for how we manage things now, like, you know, cabins that were originally designed, you know, and imagined to be very single-gendered spaces, you know, and same thing with bathrooms. But that's been, you know, I mean, that's sort of a subsequent issue, I think, that we can always figure out facility issues. The most important piece is figuring out the people issues, right? How do we make sure that people are feeling accepted? And so even with that, you know, we have that, you know, as our policy now for how we ensure that trans campers feel comfortable. And we haven't heard any negative things from parents at all.
Wow, amazing. Yeah, this parent side of it, and from your campers themselves, I think speaks highly, right? That that you've got, you know, trans campers coming to your camp to begin with, mm-hmm. is kind of a mm-hmm. testament to that level of inclusivity and how well it seems that Mask Batoon and sort of you and your board team have approached this rethinking of what a camp can be and how it's, you know, maybe practicing those Affirm values and ideals.
Mm-hmm.
I had a question about sort of reconciling these multiple identities you might have, or even as a camp, but it sounds like there's maybe a bit of a reciprocal relationship that went on with this camp overhaul or with this camp update. dealing with things like this Christian identity and timeless and traditional, and what does that mean in terms of being modern and open and inclusive, and your own sort of relationship to Christianity, to religion, sort of comes through in a way through the camp redevelopment process, which is kind of interesting to hear, kind of cool to hear, Kevin. That one's not really a question, sorry.
No, that's okay. And I guess I could respond to that a little bit, you know, just in terms of those disparate identities. I think, and I understand sort of where you're coming from. I mean, I think there's so many different factors at play. I remember one time one of the board members who had never seen me, and this was when I was still on staff at camp, she'd never seen me at camp before, and she was really surprised when she came out one night and I was leading campfire songs and I was dressed as I normally was at camp, looking very, you know, outdoorsy, I guess, ready to do whatever I do at, in a day at camp. And she commented afterwards and she said, I just never really imagined you kind of fitting in here. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, you know, when I see you in the city, you just seem so urban. You know, you have a Starbucks, or you, you know, are coming from work or class. And you know, she's like, I always just imagined that sort of who you were. And I said, well, that is who I am. I mean, that's who I am when I'm in the city. I like Starbucks as much as the next person. And, you know, I have a job and go to school and all that. But yeah, I mean, here I'm also this person, and I'm both of them at the same time. You know, I don't feel like it's the sort of alter ego, like I can only be one in one place and one in the other. You know, those aspects of your identity always shift into each other. You know, and again, I go back to that core value at camp about just authenticity, right? And about being yourself. And that's not to say that there's ever just one version of yourself. Of course, you know, that kind of shifts over time and with different people. But I think just allowing whoever you are to shine through at any moment, I think is so important, and encouraging other people to do the same.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a really beautiful statement. I think a very powerful kind of statement to make, and one that I think I have maybe another one or two questions, but I think that's definitely like a really beautiful quote to use to maybe sort of close the interview on, is this importance of just always letting that honest self shine through. As an adult who enjoys the outdoors, any recommendations or anything you would say to like other queer or like non-binary adults who are looking to get more outdoors experience?
Yeah, that's a good question too.
And maybe that's a little broad. I know that, you know, the camp is a big center of that for you.
For sure. No, I see where you're coming from. One of the things I laugh about, one of my good friends is very not into camping, and he's come camping with me a couple times, both out to Camp Musketoon, but also just sort of you know, front country camping. And I mean, he makes it very clear that he does not like it. I mean, tenting, campfires, bugs, as he always says, there's just so much nature. And you know, I think at this point, you know, he's not really interested in sort of learning to love camping, and that's okay. That's part of who he is. And, you know, I love him for that. But it's funny that when we talk about, you know, maybe even meeting new people and going on dates with people, so often early on, you know, in my own experience and experiences of friends, that comes up, you know, do you like camping? And I've found that it's actually, for my gay friends, often a really, a big point of contention, you know, when their values and interests in that area don't align. Because for somebody who really likes being outside, you know, the thought of dragging a reluctant partner with them is, terrible, really. I mean they want to be able to do one of the things they love the most and be in the place they love the most with the person they love the most. And so I think that can actually be a really a big challenge for people in relationships. But of course, that's often for people that, you know, have decidedly said, you know, I don't really want to get into the outdoors. For the people that do, you know, I mean I think that there are you know, and I'm not part of them, but I know that there's a number of different organizations in the city that, you know, connect queer people to different sort of sports and things like that. So, you know, I'd imagine that there's probably organizations, you know, in contacting a place like the Pride Center that might be able to put them in touch with those kinds of groups, because I think that there are communities out there. And I think that, you know, a lot of outdoors people are really wonderful people that, you know, would be happy to kind of take somebody new under their wing and you know, show them the ropes, so to speak, you know, even just for a little weekend camping trip, you know, nothing too extreme. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, maybe a gap, maybe something that we, I guess, as a queer community and an outdoors community need to do a little more work on is, you know, figuring out how to make it more accessible for people that don't have those experiences.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a question that's still open. Well, I think that is a question, and it does have new growing answers and kind of a growing movement or push to create more spaces and more resources, but especially for mm-hmm. adults, it's still developing. And
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you know, as somebody who works in sort of youth camping, not an area of focus for mine, but, you know, we're always thinking about how we can grow our program, and one of the things that we talk about sometimes is, you know, putting on an adult camp, so maybe that'll be one of the, you know, things you'll see Camp Masculinity doing in the future is adult camping weeks and, you know, making sure that that's really queer inclusive too.
I can imagine an off-season camping, winter, fall, being very popular if you keep the talent.
I think there's lots of potential.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, we'd be there.
Perfect.
I hope you enjoyed our interview with Kevin McBean. Kevin is an English teacher and member of the board of directors of Camp Masculinity. There's still a lot of progress that needs to be made, and we encourage you to take some time, think about the places you know and love, and ruminate on how we can make these spaces more welcoming. Thanks for taking the time to sit with us and share your experiences, and thank you, Elizabeth Daudel, for doing the interview. Terra Informa is a production of CJSR 88.5 FM. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email us at terra@cjsr.com. I have been your host, Skylar Lippman. Thanks for listening.
Is Bird Note. Male northern cardinals, scarlet tanagers, and house finches all have striking red plumage that's thought to play a role in attracting mates. To develop red feathers, they need to eat seeds or fruit containing pigment molecules called yellow carotenoids. Their bodies then change those pigments from yellow to red. Males with the brightest red feathering tend to have the best luck with the females. Scientists think that a male's redness signals to females that he has just what it takes to help produce superior offspring. But just because a male is a brilliant shade of red, does that mean he's stronger or more fit than his duller-colored competitors? Scientists think one end.